consulting my archives earlier today, I noted that it's actually quite rare for us to have a shiur on Parsha Shmini. Between Purim and Pesach, it generally falls either in one or the other. And so it's for us a relatively rare opportunity to take a look at this Parsha. So let us begin at the beginning. And as we know, the Yom HaShmini, the first day of the operation of the Mishkan, there were a number of special korbanos. And it begins, Vayi b'Yom HaShmini, on the eighth day. On the face of it, couldn't be simpler, and nothing yet to say. But as we will see, these words, Vayi b'Yom HaShmini, are the subject of a major discussion amongst the Rishonim. When exactly is the Yom HaShmini? And we open with Rashi's words on Vayihi b'Yom HaShmini, Shmini l'Miluim. When we refer to this as the eighth day, I mean, how can the eighth day be the beginning? It's the eighth day because it is day eight after the 7 days of the Miluim. The days of the Miluim are the preparatory, the inaugural days, where the Mishkan was set up and then taken down, and it was the preparatory days to the actual final setting up of the Mishkan. Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It was the first of Nisan, Shehu Kama Mishkan Bo Bayom. That's when the Mishkan was finally set up. It turns out, according to Rashi, that the reckoning of the 7 days of the Miluim, they were the final 7 days of the month of Adar, from Kaf Gimel through to Kaf Tes, from the 23rd to the 29th. And then, the next day, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the beginning of Nisan, is the Yom HaShmini of those 7 days, or post those 7 days. That's the first day of the actual running, normal running, so to speak, or the beginning, the inauguration of the Mishkan. Now, it is important to note that the Torah itself has given us a date for the running of the Mishkan, for the setting up of the Mishkan, that is to say. That date itself will become sucked into the discussion. In Perek Mem of Chumash Shemos, this is the end of Parshas Pikudei, twice the Torah refers to the date of the setting up of the Mishkan. In Pasuk Beis, it states, Bayom HaChodesh HaRishon, Be'echad HaChodesh, on the first month, on the first of the month, that is to say, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Takim Es Mishkan Ohel Moed, you shall set up the Mishkan. And similarly, in Pasuk Yud Zayin of that Perek, it states, Bayihi BaChodesh HaRishon, Bashana Shenis, on the first month, Be'echad BaChodesh, on the first of the month, again, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Hukam HaMishkan. The Mishkan was set up. Important to note exactly what this means. After all, according to Rashi, the Mishkan had already been set up for 7 days from the 23rd of Adar. What then does the Pasuk mean when it says that on the 1st of Nisan, apparently, and no earlier, the Mishkan was set up? Well, according to Rashi, the understanding is that prior to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, for those initial 7 days, it was put up and then taken down. That's not yet called Hukam HaMishkan. Hukam HaMishkan means it was put up and it stayed up. So Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is identified by the Pasuk as the Hukam HaMishkan, it's not the first day that the Mishkan was set up. It's the first day that it set up and stayed up until further notice. And this actually relates to another matter. For we are saying that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the first day the Mishkan was set up permanently, so to speak, within context. It turns out, therefore, that the Torah in Parshas Pikudei described Rosh Chodesh Nisan as the day that it's finally set up, before it described the preparatory days of the Miluim. By that we mean, in the end of Pikudei, we have in Pasuk Yud Zayin, which we quoted just before, on the first of the month, Hukam HaMishkan, and we are saying that's really Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That's described there. Two parshas later, in the end of Parshas Tzav, which we read on Shabbos, that's what we read on Shabbos, it describes the days of the Miluim at great length. So we important to take note of this, we have before us an example of Ein Muktam Umu'uchar Batorah, and Rashi mentions this explicitly in Parshas Tzav, Perek Ches, Pasuk Beis. For the later event on Rosh Chodesh Nisan is mentioned earlier than the prior event in the end of Adar. And what's so striking about this, after all, if with Rashi we're no strangers to the idea of Ein Muktam Umu'uchar Batorah, but nonetheless, here we have what we could term quite an extreme example, because you actually have the later event described in an earlier Chumash, and then the earlier event in a later Chumash. That's quite a divide. Shmos describes the beginning of Nisan, and Vayikra describes the end of Adar. That's quite a split. And yet, we say, so be it. But in fact, there's more to it than that. One of the classic Mefarshim on Rashi, the Sefer Be'er Yitzchak, Reb Yitzchak Horowitz, explains that to understand, and sometimes we do try and understand, why is the later event mentioned first? Why is the earlier event mentioned later on? Well, it really depends on the topic at hand. What is being discussed? After all, the difference between the Mishkan in Chumash Shemos and the Mishkan in Chumash Vayikra, it features in both, except in Chumash Shemos, the focus is on the building of the Mishkan. Clearly, beginning with Truma, the Asuli Mikdash. Whereas, in Chumash Vayikra, the focus is on the Avoda in the Mishkan. It's really on the Korbanos. The Mishkan is there as the setting for what happens there. The Korbanos, etc. And therefore, says the Be'er Yitzchak, a very wonderful comment. In Chumash Shemos, if it's about the building of the Mishkan, then the only date, or the significant date, which represents the culmination of the building of the Mishkan, is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. I mean, that's the day that it was set up to stay up. It's true, there were preparatory days, but that's in terms of getting the Mishkan ready, in terms of its avoda, those special korbanos that were brought, and therefore the Pasuk goes straight to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, even though it's the later date. In contrast, we have Chumash Vayikra, which is all about the Avoda. So if it's about the Avoda in the Mishkan, it will focus on the various Avodas that took place in the Mishkan, beginning with the 7 days of the Miluim, those special korbanos that happened, even though they happened earlier on. So this is a classic example of what Rav Kuperman Zatzal used to refer to as Torat HaHashlama. When the Torah begins a topic, it sees it through to the end, even though the final descriptions or expressions of that topic may be later, other events that have yet to be described. So the topic of Chumash Shemos is building the Mishkan. Torat HaShlama takes us to the culmination of the building of the Mishkan, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The topic of Vayikra is Avodas HaMishkan, and then we refer to the relevant dates there. So that's Rashi. Yom HaShmini is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, following the final 7 days of Adar. However, Rashi's position is disputed, and Rashi, we should note, is sourced in the Toras Kohanim. He quotes the Toras Kohanim, that's Medrash Chazal. But Rashi's position is disputed by none other than the Ibn Ezra. And the Ibn Ezra insists and maintains that when the Pasuk says that the Mishkan, the first day of the running of the Mishkan, is the Yom HaShmini, the reference is to not the first of Nisan, but the eighth of Nisan. According to the Ibn Ezra's understanding, the 7 days of Miluim that preceded the day of the setting up of the Mishkan were the first 7 days of Nisan. He understands things a week later, one could say, than Rashi. Which means, first and foremost, that his understanding of the Pasuk in Chumash Shemos, which dates the setting up of the Mishkan as Rosh Chodesh Nissan is not the date of the final setting up of the Mishkan, but the date of the initial setting up of the Mishkan, even though it would be set up and taken down and it won't stay up until 8 days later. But nonetheless, Rosh Chodesh Nissan timestamps the setting up of the Mishkan because it is the first day that it was set up in any capacity. So on the one hand, the Pasuk was quite clear in dating Rosh Chodesh Nissan, but there's still room to discuss what happened on Rosh Chodesh Nissan. To what degree was the Mishkan set up? First of the seven preparatory days, or the final eighth day? Now, one thing is important to stress, because we may be inclined to see if the Ibn Ezra, he's going Lifi Pshuto, and when the Pasuk says Vayi Bayom Hashmini, perhaps he sees the Yom Hashmini as the eighth of Nissan. Couldn't be simpler. However, as the Malbim states, that is clearly nothing to do with the position of the Ibn Ezra. No one gets their cue about the date here from the words by Yom Hashmini. There is no way that Yom Hashmini can refer to the eighth of the month. And the reason why is because if you look throughout Tanakh, which the Malbim very kindly did for us, you will note that the Pasuk never refers to a date of the month without adding the word such and such lachodesh. If it just gives you a number in abstract, it's going to be connected to some other date, whatever it may be. And therefore, no one would look at the word Vayu B'Yom HaShmini and say, oh, Yom HaShmini means the 8th of Nisan, because otherwise it would say Hashmini Lachodesh. And in fact, this question has already been thrashed through by the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah and Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, where it refers to the Pasuk of the building of the first Beis HaMikdash in the days of Shlomo HaMelech. It quotes a Pasuk in Melachim, and the Pasuk there says that he began building B'chodesh HaSheni B'Sheni. And the Gemara wants to know what is the meaning of that second word, B'Sheni. Well, someone in the Gemara suggests maybe it means the second of the month. B'chodesh HaSheni, second month, B'Sheni, and the second of the month. And the Gemara rejects that, because the Gemara states, and this is the source of the Malbim, if it was the second of the month, it would have said B'Sheni Lachodesh. If it says B'Sheni, it's going to mean something else. It does not mean the second of the month. Therefore, similarly here, B'Yom HaShmini does not mean the eighth of the month. It means the eighth apropos of the seven Yimei HaMiluim. So there are other reasons why the Ibn Ezra understands that it's the eighth of Nisan. Well, the primary question of the Ibn Ezra, seemingly quite compelling. Namely, we know what happened on this day. Certain korbanos are brought, and the Pasuk seemingly spares no detail in terms of the various korbanos. Well, says Ibn Ezra, if this Yom HaShmini is the first of the month, then there's a korban that was offered that has not been referred to. Namely, the first of the month is Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh has korban musaf. And therefore, says Ibn Ezra, amongst the various korbanos which we see, there's psukim at length, and these are the korbanos for Aaron and for Bnei Yisrael, why is there no reference to the musaf of Rosh Chodesh? Rather, says Ibn Ezra, it is clear that it's not the first of the month, but rather it's the other date, it's the eighth of the month. There were no other korbanos beyond these special korbanos here. That is the argument of the Ibn Ezra. Well, we should not be surprised to hear that some people reacted to this question. First and foremost amongst them is the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh, as often happens when he feels that the Ibn Ezra has not done full justice to the opinion of Chazal, as it may or may not have been brought in Rashi. Maharal will get involved. And here the Maharal says the answer to that question, his understanding, is very simple. Namely, again, Ibn Ezra is saying, if it's Rosh Chodesh, there's another Korban, why isn't it mentioned? Says Maharal, simply because the Pasuk dealing with Yom HaShmini as the first day of the setting up of the Mishkan only involves itself with the special Korbanos for that day. Not other korbanos, which may or may not have been relevant. If there's another korban, it's because of Rosh Chodesh. But that's true every Rosh Chodesh. That's not true because it's the first day of the running of the Mishkan, this historic occasion. And therefore, it may well have been, and indeed it is the case, as far as the Maharal is concerned, that it was Rosh Chodesh. And there was a Korban Musaf, but the Pasuk didn't talk about it because that's not relevant to the Yom HaShmini, to this day, special day one. And in fact, says Maharal, I'll prove it to you. Hari, all must concur that there is at least another set of Korbanos that no one has referred to here. And that is the Korbanos of the Nesiim, also an important part of Chanukah's HaMishkan even. After all, whatever is the date, we know from Parshas Noso that on day one, Yehuda, Nachshon ben Aminadav, Lemate Yehuda, so he brought, it's the laning for Chanukah, we hear it many times, Karas Kesef Achaz, etc. and so forth. Pasuk didn't talk about it. Why? Because it's not relevant to the Yom HaShmini as is to that special day. And so too with regards to the Korban Musaf, but indeed it was Rosh Chodesh. One could respond, perhaps, to this response of Maharal, that maybe you can't compare the Korbanos of the Nesiim to these other Korbanos. The Korbanos of the Nesiim were their own elective Korbanos, as much as it was part of the Chanukah and Mishkan, but they weren't told to bring them because that was really their own voluntary Korban. So Moshe didn't talk about it. Korban Musaf is not voluntary. It should have been mentioned. But be that as it may, we are in the middle now of quite a heated discussion between Rashi and the Ibn Ezra. When is the Yom HaShmini? Now, Rashi's source, as we mentioned, is the Medrash in the Toras Kohanim. What about Ibn Ezra? Well, it seems that we're in one of those situations that the Ibn Ezra is just not like Rashi, and he's also not like the Medrash. And who is he like? He's like the Ibn Ezra. It's happened before, and it will happen again. He'll explain the psukim the way he understands them, Alderech HaPshat, and he's not deterred, regardless of what Rashi says or what the Medrash says. And classic Ibn Ezra. Well, that's how it would seem. But interestingly, in this case, we will discover that that is not so. As the Mizrahi points out. And the way that we will arrive at this discovery is by referring to an episode that is mentioned in Parshas Baalosecha, the episode of Pesach Sheni. Briefly, what happened? There were people that they couldn't bring the Korban Pesach at its time, and they came to Moshe, and they were the first ones to voice the classic Jewish complaint, Zelo Fair, because we'd also want to bring the Korban Pesach. Amazed that they could do that. And more amazingly, it was accepted, and they were given Pesach Sheni. And the Sifrei in Parshas Baalosecha is quite keen to find out who were these people who were Tamein Nefesh Adam. It's a discussion in the Sifrei, parallel to the Gemara's discussion about this, in the second parak of Masechet Sukkah on Daf Kaf Hei. And actually, we find three approaches or opinions as to who these people may have been. After all, the background to this, one should mention parenthetically, Rashi tells us that in that first year, no one died. And therefore, who's going to be Tommy the Nefesh Adam? Well, the first opinion, Rabbi Yishmael says, these were people who were Tomei, they were the ones that carried Yosef's Aron. So they're Tomei Mace. Okay. He hadn't died any time recently, but they're in contact with the Aron, and they're Tomei Mace. That's opinion number one, the carriers of Yosef's Aron. Rabbi Akiva says they were none other than Mishael and El Tzofon, who were mentioned in this week's Parsha, and they were Tomei Mace because they had to take out Nadav and Avihu, who died on this day. The third opinion, Rabbi Yitzchak says, there was a Mace Mitzvah, meaning there was someone apparently from the Erev Rav who died, and they had to take care of him, and that's just who they were. An interesting range of opinions. Carriers of Yosef, Mishael and El Tzofon, or those involved in a Mace Mitzvah. Now what's interesting is there is a problem raised against the first opinion, though they carried Yosef's Aron. Namely, why do they find themselves on Erev Pesach Tomei? It only takes 7 days. And when's the last time they set down Yosef's Aron? No one's traveled anywhere for a long time. They're still encamped around Har Sinai for months. So They have months to get themselves tahor. So why do they have this? Why are they stuck on Erev Pesach? They're tummy and we're not sure what to do. Should have gotten their act together and become tahor in good time. And that's why the other opinions move away. It's Mishal and Al-Safan, or maybe Meis Mitzvah. There's just one problem. If that's the difficulty with the first opinion, you've had plenty time to become tahor. So then whose opinion is next? Rabbi Akiva. Mishael and Al-Tzafan. Ah, that's different. Even there, Rabbi Yitzchak says, they've also got plenty of time. Why? Because Nadav and Avihu died on the first day of the running of the Mishkan. Pesach is 2 weeks later. So from the Rosh Chodesh Nisan until 2 weeks later, you have plenty of time. So where does this idea of Mishael and Al-Tzafan, they still have time. The very same problem with the first opinion exists with Rabbi Akiva. In what way is he better? For Rabbi Yitzchak, a Meis Mitzvah happened and they didn't have enough time. But what about Rabbi Akiva? And therefore, says the Mizrahi, it seems to me that Rabbi Akiva is the source of the Ibn Ezra. Namely, that Rabbi Akiva understands that they did not have time. Why? Because Nadav and Avihu died on the first day of the running of the Mishkan. And that was the 8th of Nisan. If it's the 8th of Nisan, then day 7 will be the 14th. That's Erev Pesach. They were stuck. And thus we see that there is at least one opinion within the Medrash Halacha. And what an opinion. It's Rabbi Akiva, who actually becomes the source of Ibn Ezra. So what is well known as the Machlokas Rishonim, Rashi Ibn Ezra, the 1st versus the 8th, ultimately can be seen as a machlokas tanoim between the Taras Kohanim and between Rabbi Akiva. So that's just an opening word about the phrase Vayehi Bayom HaShmini, some of the highlights of that discussion. There are further details, but for our purposes, just to acquaint ourselves with this very interesting parshanut matter. I don't think the halacha changes one way or the other, but to understand the words of the pasuk, that's also important. And having mentioned the first three words of the Parsha, let's move forward and take a look at some of the special korbanos of the day. In Perek Tes Pasuk Gimel, Ve'al b'nei Yisrael tadaber le'mor, k'chu si'iri zim l'chatos, take a goat for a chatos, ve'egel v'cheves b'nei shana tamimim le'ola, and a calf and a lamb for an ola. Okay, now sometimes one gets the feeling that when Vachumash Vayikra gets involved in korbanos, so then we get disinvolved, in the sense that they difficult to know exactly the difference between them and the significance of this one versus that one, and that is our loss. And let's take the opportunity just to have a look at these three korbanos, the significance for this first day. And here again, we have a Taras Kohanim, which relates to the goat and to the calf. And the Taras Kohanim says, Amar lehem Moshe liYisrael. Moshe says to the Jewish people, Atem, yesh bachem b'tchila, v'yesh lachem basov. You have a prior problem, sin, and a later problem. What's the prior problem? Yesh lechem b'tchila, as it says, Vayishchatu si'ir izim. They shechted a goat. And that was a very problematic occasion. That is a quotation from the sale of Yosef. They shechted a goat, and they dipped his blood, the coat in the blood. Vayesh lechem basof. And also you have a subsequent problem. Vayasu lechem egel masecha. You made an egel. And therefore, Yavo Si'ir Izim V'Yichaper Al-Masi Izim, bring a goat as a kapara for the earlier chait of the Mechiras Yosef, and bring an egel as a kapara for the cheta egel. Those are the explanatory words of the Taras Kohanim. And here, let us ask a couple of basic questions. Number one, what's the Mechiras Yosef got to do with anything here? I mean, I think we got our hands full with the Cheta Egel, which is clearly the pressing issue of the day. Mishkan is a recovery from the Egel. All of a sudden, Moshe starts dredging up the whole life story of the people. You know, he did something else, and it also wasn't so good, and I'll probably deal with that as well. It sounds like Imei Nachshavei Masai. You know, we've just been waiting for some recovery capacity, so we may as well start at the very beginning. But it sounds like then Mechiras Yosef isn't inherently connected at all. It's just baggage from the past. But that doesn't seem to be what the Torah's Kohanim is saying. Especially as the Torah's Kohanim refers to these two infractions, these two episodes, as Tchila and Sof, beginning and end. Now, beginning and end don't sound like two disconnected events, just one happened earlier and one happened later. He didn't say Yesh Lechem Kodem, Yesh Lechem La'achar Zman, earlier and later. He said beginning and end. It sounds like they're beginning and the end of something, which means somehow the goat of the sale of Yosef and the goat of the Chet HaEgel are connected. They represent the brackets of a process. But how are they connected? And a final question, which I think is also worthwhile voicing, is how exactly is the goat really, really a reference to the represent the sale of Yosef? I understand how the eagle represents the Chet HaEgel, because it was an eagle. But the sale of Yosef, the problem is Yosef. It's what they did to Yosef, it's not what they did to the poor goat. Now, I don't have a better suggestion, by the way, as to what they should have brought as a korban, not one of their brothers. But nonetheless, it seems to be slightly vicarious, slightly disconnected in that way. We scan the parsha, and the only animal you can find is the goat, who was, you could almost say, is the haftorah of the sale of Yosef. And things being what they are, that's the animal that we'll use. But it doesn't seem to be inherently connected. So these are, I believe, the pertinent questions with regards to the Torah's Kohanim's explanation here. Unnoticed or undiscussed by us so far, quietly there in the pasuk, is the keves, is the lamb, which is also one of their korbanos. And what's the significance of that? This is discussed by the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. And Targum Yonasan ben Uziel explains that they brought the lamb in order to arouse the merit of Yitzchak Avinu. How's Yitzchak Avinu a lamb? Because he was offered on the Mizbeach like a lamb. He's submitted like a lamb. And therefore the keves is to be ma'orer, the schus of Yitzchak. And once again, we ask. Yitzchak Avinu is... There's nothing one needs to say about him. But he is one of the three avos. So of all the three, why is it that it's specifically Yitzchak who is the... His presence is required here. His merit is required here. What about Avram and Yaakov? We don't find korbanos that represent them. And moreover, we should know that the connection between Yitzchak specifically and this day goes deeper. I mean, it is, the Gemara tells us that Yitzchak was born in Nisan. Avram and Yaakov were born in Tishrei. How does it go deeper? In another statement of the Medrash in the Psikta, it actually tells us that the timing of the setting up of the Mishkan was not determined by when they were ready. The Psikta tells us that they actually finished, I mean, they began making the Mishkan or assembling, etc., around about Sukkot's time, and they finished on the 25th of Kislev. The original Chanukah was when they finished making the Mishkan, except... Hashem said, we're not setting up the Mishkan yet. Leave it. It was just in storage for a long time. Teves, Shvat, Adar, 3 months, long time. And Hashem delayed the setting up of the Mishkan until the month of Nisan. And the reason why is because the month of Nisan is when Yitzchak was born. That's the appropriate time to set up the Mishkan. Now we need to reckon with that connection. Because it's one thing for it to be appropriate. Once again, we ask. Yitzchak is one of the three avos. If you time things for when he was born, that's good. If you wait till Tishrei, I don't even know if that's an option, so then you'll get Avram and Yaakov together. But moreover, once again, we see this special connection between Yitzhak and the Mishkan, and it's got to be very good connection, because 3 months is really a long time, especially as the setting up of the Mishkan represents the final expression of the atonement for the Chet HaEgel, which is weighing down on everyone's mind. And in fact, the Psikta itself says that the Jewish people were on Shpilkas for months, because they're ready to set up the Mishkan, nothing's happening. They're in a state of tension. It's got to be worth it to wait for those 3 months. No one's mind was at ease until the Mishkan was finally set up. Those were 3 long months. And interestingly, the Psikta then says that's why Hashem repaid, so to speak, the Jewish people with the Chanukah Samizbeach on the 25th of Kislev. Those are the roots of Hanukkah there, because really it was in place of the original Hanukkah that should have been on the 25th of Kislev. So, what are we to make of all of this? We understand that the Mishkan is a day which marks and celebrates and culminates the recovery from the Egel, the fundamental tikkun, rectification of the Egel. With regard to the Chet HaEgel, the Kuzari discusses the Chet. And he explains that in technical terms, the making of an Egel is not the problem. For reasons that he describes, there's some physical medium, at least to channel a message from Hashem. Says the Kuzari, from a certain point of view, it's not unlike the Aron. It looks different, of course, but the Aron is also a physical medium that channels a message from Hashem. The fundamental problem with the Egel is not Egel versus Aron, but rather it's the Jewish people, if they're at a crossroads, how do they proceed? The problem was that they took it upon themselves to chart the course of how the Jewish people will receive their messages from Hashem. That was a fundamental error. The primary difference, says the Kuzari, between the Egel and the Aron is that they were told to make the Aron, and they were not told to make the Egel. They kind of proceeded on their own initiative and thought they'd work it out, and this is the best way. That was the fundamental wrong turn. Especially as Moshe has gone missing, and clearly in their estimation, their understanding, and clearly the Egel was meant to be a replacement of Moshe, not of Hashem, right? Except Aaron is there. And Aaron is the natural replacement. On the contrary, for most of them, Moshe was the replacement for Aaron in their understanding. But okay, Moshe's not here. Aaron is there. If they're not sure how to proceed, the correct course is to go to Aaron and say, Moshe's not here, what should we do? The problem was, they did go to Aaron and got everything backwards. They came to Aaron and says, Moshe isn't here, and therefore we are now telling you what to do. That reversal of exactly who follows whose lead was really where the problematic area of the Egel is. And in the end, it downward spiraled from there. Which means that essentially to get back on track, to fully recover from the Egel, it's not just enough to be doing mitzvahs as opposed to averos. What the Jewish people need to restore the correct flow of how they relate to their elders and betters, how they relate to someone like Aaron, to the Zikne Hador. And the personality who represents the quintessence of the correct way to go about things in this respect is Yitzhak Avinu. The fact that Yitzhak, he is the antithesis of the Chet HaEgel. Here's the Chet HaEgel, the Jewish people are saying, in our understanding and to the best of our insight, this is the correct way to establish our relationship with Hashem. It seems to us most reasonable, and this is how we'll proceed. The Akedas Yitzhak, of course, is the nth degree of unreasonable. It doesn't make sense on any level. Yitzhak knows that a human sacrifice has no place in the spiritual system of what Hashem wants. And here he is being told to offer his life for something that he feels isn't really right. And all he has is, if that's what Hashem said, that's what I'm going to do. That's the amazing thing about the Akedah. And indeed, there's more. In the Tshuvas of the Chasam Sofer, in response, actually, it's something of a review of the works of the Maritz Chayas. Reb Tzvi Hirsch Chayas, one of the great Gedolim of the 1800s, he wrote the Sefer, he sent it to the Chasam Sofer, and that Tshuva, Reish Ches, is the Chasam Sofer's response to many, many aspects of the Sefer. And within the course of that Tshuva, Chasam Sofer notes that we refer to the Akedah as Akedas Yitzchak, and moreover, on Rosh Hashanah, when it's so important for us to draw on the merit of the Akedah, we really associate it with Yitzchak, it seems, more than Avram. We say, and it's the end of the Bracha of Zichronos, the Akedah of Yitzchak, Lezaro Hayom Barachamim Tisko, remember the Akedah of Yitzchak for his descendants. It sounds like we're saying, we ascribe our lineage to Yitzchak as the personality, the primary personality of the Akedah. And the question is, I mean, where did Avram go? Avram also has an important role in the Akedah. As difficult it is for Yitzchak to offer his life, it's equally, one could say, if more, not more difficult for Avram to kill Yitzchak. Yet we've really focused on Yitzchak as the, he's the Av here with regards to the Akedah. Why is that so? Well, the Chasam Sofer says, in one respect, beyond the obvious, in one respect, it was infinitely more difficult for Yitzchak to go through the Akedah than it was for Avram. And the reason very simply is, Avram heard about the Akedah from God. As difficult as it is to understand it, and as hard as it is to accept it, but there it is. Yitzchak heard about the Akedah from Avram. That is an entirely different situation. For Avram, there's no doubting what it is that he needs to do. He heard it directly. Yitzchak heard it klisheni. Avram told him that Hashem told him that he has to kill him. There's going to be a certain part of Yitzchak that's wondering, well, maybe Avram just didn't understand correctly. All the rational difficulties with it could then be put down to very simply a mistake on Avram's part. Which means that for Yitzchak, the greatest triumph of the Akedah is that he places absolute trust in Avram's understanding of what it is that Hashem told him to do. And he'll stake his life on it. And to that end, the Akedah is associated with Yitzchak more than Avram. It's a different level of submission, essentially. Which means we can certainly understand how Yitzchak, in terms of recovery from the Chet HaEgel, if it's about restoring the correct order of the flow of where guidance in terms of Judaism comes from the top downwards as opposed to from the bottom upwards, we understand that Yitzchak really is the central personality. And that's why of all of the Avos, a Korban is brought to evoke the merit of Yitzchak, because the Jewish people need to be a lot more Yitzchak-like on this day. And so much so that the entire setting up of the Mishkan was delayed until the month that Yitzchak was born. 3 months, and 3 long months, as we noted. But it doesn't matter. It is absolutely worth it. Because if the Mishkan is not set up in a Yitzchak-tika way, so then it may fail. It may not be worth it in the end. It's worth waiting. Because when Nisan comes and it's Yitzchak's month and his presence there is part of the setting up of the Mishkan, that's called a recovery from the Chet HaEgel. So thus we see the special connection between Yitzchak and the Mishkan in terms of timing and in terms of Korbanos. Truth be told, we're just a few days after Purim, but as we mentioned in the past, it's the very same question. That is the problem with Purim and the recovery in Purim. Maharal, in the Sefer Chodosh, explains that the indictment of the Jewish people for going to Achashverosh's Suda wasn't just, quote-unquote, that the food may not have been Mahadrin or the whole atmosphere may not have been Mahadrin. It wasn't just about that. It basically represented a policy on the Jewish people as to how to get ahead. How should the Jewish people chart their course now outside of Israel, post-Beis HaMikdash? How do we succeed here? And they came to a decision that at Achashverosh's party, anyone who's anyone will be there. That's the place that the Jewish people need to make friends, and therefore we can't afford not to be there, even if it's not the most kosher of circumstances. It was a policy decision about the direction of the Jewish people. How do we succeed? And that's why, in a sense, that represents a certain reversal from understanding that for the Jewish people, the way to succeed is through holding fast onto the Torah with both hands. And that's why the confrontation was really came to a head when they're under threat of annihilation, and they need to recover. They need to get out of it. Well, how are they going to get out of it? So the person who's telling them how to extricate themselves from this situation is Mordechai. According to the prior model, Mordechai is not in a position to guide them out of it. He's the one that got them into it. A linear reading, a political reading of the Megillah, has Mordechai as the prime cause of Haman's animosity. Mordechai, he's the problem. So Mordechai is really challenging the very foundations of the Jewish people. He's challenging them to their core. Because he's saying, I'm demanding of you that as much as there's a part of you, there's a prior vision that looks upon me as public enemy number one, I am the problem. So I'm putting to you that I'm not the problem. You are the problem because you went to Achashverosh's feast 9 years ago, even though not much has happened in between. And not only am I not the problem, I'm the solution. And if you want to get out of this, you have to do exactly what I say. That was a critical moment for the Jewish people because these two are diametrically opposed. They either get rid of Mordechai or follow him to the letter. And the Jewish people at this moment where they could not afford to make the wrong decision, when their very existence was threatened, absolutely, so their essence came through for them. And they threw their lot in with Mordechai and Laihud and Maisa Ora. And that's why Purim is once again such a time of Kabbalah Satorah, because based on their own experience, they saw that their very survival came as a result of following Mordechai. Regardless, does he look like he's doing the right thing? Not sure. Doesn't look like it always. Doesn't matter. Mordechai said, Jewish people are with him. And as Rav Elie Lapin said, the heroes of the Purim story are the Jewish people. I mean, they're spearheaded by Mordechai and Esther. But that is a heroic decision from their part. And as a result of that, as we say, Hodor Kiblua b'mei Achashverosh. Well, that's not about that. That's about afterwards, recently. And I'd like to take this one stage further. Here we are, based on the Kuzari, and the Beis Halevi discusses this at length in Parshas Kisisa, the problem with the Egel, their own ideas, their own initiative versus following divine instructions. Where's the root, if one may ask? Is there a root? Is this it? Is this where it started? I believe, with trepidation, but I believe it started earlier on. Yosef's brothers have issues with him. They feel that his behavior is absolutely unacceptable for any number of reasons. Some Mepharshim say they think he's a rodef, he's looking to sideline them, maybe he's married b'machus Yehuda, it could be a number of things. Ad kedei kach, they decide to take action, either to kill him or they commute his sentence and they sell him into slavery. So if we ask a hopefully not inappropriate question, how come no one ever asked Yaakov what to do? He may also have some insight into the situation. Somehow, the brothers did not consult Yaakov. Why not? Maybe they felt that he was too invested in the situation, perhaps his judgment would be prejudiced. Well, that the same may well be true for them. I mean, Yaakov is the father, they're the brothers. I mean, they're all family. No one here is impartial. For whatever reasons that perhaps we can't fathom, the brothers did not consult with Yaakov and they decided to set their course based on their own initiative and their own judgment. on the contrary, not only did they not involve Yaakov, or they didn't consult Yaakov, their relationship with Yaakov was the reverse, because they actually took steps to conceal the entire matter from him. And that is what happened when they, after having sold Yosef, they took the goat, they shechted it, and they dipped Yosef's coat in blood. That is an expression of their relationship with Yaakov here. Not only are they asking him what to do, they're not asking him, not consulting him, they're not even informing him. He's absolutely sidelined in terms of this. Therefore, we raised the question earlier, dipping of the coat in the goat's blood. I mean, that's not really an essential part of the sale of Yosef. How does it represent the sale of Yosef? Except the answer is, it doesn't. The dipping of the coat in the goat's blood is not an expression of their shortcomings vis-a-vis their relationship with Yosef. It's about their shortcomings in terms of their relationship with Yaakov. And that is where the problem is. And one perhaps could say that we can't really fully fathom, or even maybe partially fathom, what is happening with the brothers. These are Shivtei Ka. But at the end of the day, you see the first reversal of how to go about dealing with a problematic situation. If they're unsure, if they're at a crossroads, Yaakov is there. He's the Zokin Hador. He's the elder of the generation. Is he consulted, or is he put to the side? And the dipping of the coat in blood put Yaakov to the side. And perhaps therefore we can understand why it is that on this day, which represents the recovery from Egel, the first korban that's brought is the goat, about the dipping of the blood. As the Torah's Kohanim says, Yesh bi'etchem batchila, v'yesh bi'etchem basof. You have a problem in the beginning and the end. The Egel, in a sense, was the end. It was the end of a process that began with the goat. Because the earlier process was the slightest of cracks in terms of, when in doubt, do we consult or do we proceed and cover up? And therefore, that's the beginning. In the fullness of time, with so many other factors involved, in the end, if the brothers can do that with the goat of Yosef, for their reasons, which are much, much higher, their descendants, who are somewhat lower, may end up making an eagle, because they could have that a similar reversal of their relationship with Aaron. And therefore, the goat and the eagle are the beginning and the end. So that, I believe, is the biur in the Torah's Kohanim. So that's plenty to think about in terms of the Yom HaShmini. And yet, it's fascinating to consider, in light of all of this, something that happens in our parsha, namely the death of Nadav and Avihu, which is described in Perek Yud Pasuk Beis. So, or Pasuk Aleph is Vayikru Bnei Aaron Nadav Avihu Ishmachtoso. Each one, they take their fire pan, vayitnu van esh, vayasimu leah ketores, vayakrivu lefnei Hashem esh zora asher lo tziva osam. They did something that they were commanded not to do. They brought the fire into where they shouldn't have brought it. It may be in the heichal, or maybe even into the kodesh hakodashim. Vateitzei esh min lefnei Hashem vatochel osam, vayamusu lefnei Hashem, and they were killed. Well, all mefarshim are wondering, what is it that Nadav and Avihu did that was so wrong? At the end of the day, I mean, it sounds like they did a mitzvah. Okay, no one told them to do it, but maybe they went a little bit too close. But Rashi quotes two opinions from Chazal. The first is, Horu halacha bifnei Moshe Rabban. They did not consult Moshe with regards to the halacha. They felt that the first, even though a fire does come down from heaven onto the Mizbeach, but nonetheless, we should also bring fire, which, by the way, happens to be true in certain circumstances, with certain locations. But Moshe's there. They didn't ask. The second comment, and interestingly, by the way, I don't recall who makes this comment, but the idea of Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabbam, they didn't ask Moshe, they didn't ask their father, they just made a decision and acted on it. The pasuk says, "Vayikhu b'nei Aaron Nadav and Avihu." Interesting to note, once again, throughout Tanakh, whenever people have a certain, let's say, title or description, the pasuk will always give you their name first and then who they are. It should have said, "Vayikhu Nadav Avihu b'nei Aaron." That's their names and then who they are. But it begins with B'nai Aaron and then Nadav and Avihu. And this, is, in a sense, is an allusion in the pasuk that they weren't comfortable being B'nai Aaron, as if to say they're the ones who were receiving and listening and being instructed, but rather they're moving from being B'nai Aaron to being their own people, Nadav and Avihu. The second Perush Rashi quotes is, from Rabbi Shmuel, Shesuya Yayin Nichnasu LeMikdash. They entered the Mikdash in an inebriated state. So these are two understandings, two approaches from Chazal. Interestingly, there's more. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Sanhedrin, it's a very harsh words from the Gemara. Moshe and Aaron, they were walking. Nadav and Avihu, they're second in command. They're second in the chain. They're walking after them. Or the rest of the Jewish people after them. Nadav says to Avihu, when will these two elders, when will they pass away? Va'ani va'ata nanhiges hador, and me and you can then lead the generation. Amar lehen HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Hanir'eh mi kover es mi. We will see who buries whom. The Gemara is saying that Nadav and Avihu, that they're impatient, and they feel maybe they could lead the generation better. And that's what they expressed at the time. Interestingly, there's a fascinating medrash which states, "Kisherah Iyov misa shnei bnei Aaron." When Iyov saw the death of the two sons of Aaron, he said, and this is a quote from Iyov, "Lazos yecharad libi, for this over this my heart trembles." And the Chida asked the question, "Why does his heart tremble after the Naviyu? Is it? They're not connected to him. He's not like them. Why is he so anxious?" And the Chida explains, the Gemara tells us that Iyov was one of Paro's advisors originally, and different people had different ideas. Bilam said to persecute the Jewish people, he was killed. Yisra ran away in protest, and Iyov was silent. And it says he was nidun bi yisurim, he received a suffering as a result of that. Except one could say, he didn't do anything wrong, he didn't say anything wrong. Apparently, the point is that when one hears something objectionable and one doesn't object, so then one is complicit by omission. That is also a wrongdoing. The Gemara here says, "Amar lo Nadav va'Avihu." Nadav says to Avihu. So that means actually Nadav is doing the talking. Avihu never said anything, but they both died in the end. Why? Here is where Iyov sees that Avihu is as much at fault for hearing it and not objecting than Nadav was for saying it. And therefore, Iyov knew his own past, and he was then anxious for the future, because he says, apparently, to hear and not to protest doesn't bode well. Lazos yecharad libi. There are even further explanations in the Medrash. One says that they died because they didn't get married, and apparently the understanding is they felt that no one was good enough for them to marry. And finally, the Medrash says that their chet was shelo notlu eitzah ze mizeh. They didn't take counsel one from the other. So here we have really like a troop of explanations that are given. And this one says like this, and this one says like this. And however, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, this is not this is not a group of explanations. This is a process. I mean, each one is resonating with a different stage in this process. What's more, the pasuk itself seems to describe their crime. They brought Eish Zara Shelo Tziva Hashem, and it's explicit in the pasuk what they did wrong. And still, you have five additional explanations as to what it was that they did wrong. But really, the question is, how does it begin? The pasuk says Hashem told them. Hashem never told them to do this, but they're doing it anyway. That itself requires explanation, requires background. Why would they not ask? Why would they? Well, That's why the Medrash says, not even of you don't feel that Moshe and Aaron are their teachers. They're prepared to paskan halacha in front of them. They feel equally qualified. Says, I'm not going to ask. I mean, that's problem number one. And in that vein, the Gemara corroborates that they felt that they were already better equipped to lead the generation. They're waiting for Moshe and Aaron to pass on. And therefore, in the same way as they have this very high estimation of their own capacities, that results in the fact that they didn't get married. It also means that they perhaps didn't really take things as seriously as they should. And therefore, they didn't refrain from being somewhat inebriated even before they went into to do the avoda. Ultimately, and interestingly, they didn't even really hold each other in high esteem. And that's why the Medrash finally says, Lo notnu eitzah zeh bazeh. They didn't consult with each other, which is a fascinating explanation because they both had the same idea. It's not as if things would have been different, I don't think. Had they consulted with each other, they just would have concurred with each other, and they still would have done the same. But it's still considered a problem. Lo notnu eitzah zeh mizeh. So the irony is that after all of our discussion about the Yom HaShmini being the day of recovery from the Egel, and it's about understanding how where direction and guidance in Torah comes from. It comes from the top downwards. Nadav and Avihu on that very day somehow had an infraction in that very issue. That said, it's important to note because we can't leave off Nadav and Avihu just like that. Moshe himself in the pasuk says, "Bikrovaya Kadesh, Hashem was sanctified through those closer to Him." And the Medrash further says, I thought that perhaps the one to suffer would be me or you, but it's Nadav and Avihu, which means Moshe is voicing their greatness. And it was really because of their greatness that they overstepped their boundaries a little bit. It wasn't that they didn't know what was going on. Their sense of ambition and their sense of greatness, that's what led them astray a little bit, because it wasn't guided and wasn't monitored in that way. And it's interesting to note, every Yom Kippur, the laning begins with the death of Nadav and Avihu. Of all things, it's not just a way of getting into the Avodah of Yom Kippur. It's the introduction to Avodah of Yom Kippur. Because from a certain point of view, we need to remember that a lot of wrongdoing doesn't come from a bad place. It comes from a very good place, a lot of talent and a lot of ambition. In a good way, at the end of the day, they just tried to get closer to Hashem. And that's an important reminder, really, as an introduction to the Avodah of Yom Kippurim, because in Yom Kippur, where we're also looking to recover, we need to consider the degree to which perhaps there's something of Nadav and Avihu within us, that we have our strengths and we have our talents and we have our ambitions, but are we prepared to hear from Ziknei Hador, from Moshe and Aaron, and from exactly how we should go about things, because some of our mistakes are really the result of that. That's the introduction, and we remember them in order to learn from them, and that sets the tone for the Kapurah of Yom Kippur, and those are certainly a great deal of thought discussions from the Parsha of Shmini. We'll leave it over.